So, hi there, Rob Verkerk here. What's the buzz? Well, frequency devices. I'm going to talk now briefly. I'm going to be introducing the 8,000 word article that I published last week that takes you through the gen on frequency devices. Now, what are they not? We're not going to be looking at things that are not generally electrically operated. So there's many aspects. Frequency has always been around. It precedes life, as we showed in part one. So we're not going to be looking at the systems that use subtle energies that have been used in healing for very long periods of time. So we look at crystal healing or hands-on healing or Qigong or Reiki, even homeopathy, much more recent. We're not going to be looking at that. So we're going to be specifically looking more at the machines that have been used. The devices out there, there's a huge array of devices, some of them using electromagnetic fields, others electrical fields, some static magnetic fields, others using scalar waves, some using sound, vibratory systems that create resonance. So there's a bunch of them out there that use these fields, most of which are in the electromagnetic spectrum that includes, of course, light. That's what we're looking at. One of the overall issues that we've been discovering is that there isn't a lot of transparency out there. And in fact, one of our big calls in this article is to say, guys, if you want this sector to be sustainable and not fall foul of regulators that are always going to be, at the present moment in time, defending the interests of their biggest paymasters, the pharmaceutical industry, you've got to lift your game and really be clear about what it is that you're measuring, what it is that you're delivering. We're not going to be talking about the kind of devices that have been dominating the physiotherapy space, the TENS machines, the neuromuscular electrical stimulation devices, laser therapy, etc. One of the things that we've got to recognize when we talk about frequency medicine devices is the issue of dose. You remember in toxicology, it's the dose that makes the poison. Everything can be harmful depending on the dose. So yes, while we've got to understand the quality, the nature of the electromagnetic field or the electrical field that's being issued, we also have to know a lot about the dose, how much is being delivered to what part of the body over what period of time. And of course, that means we've got to start measuring and using units of measurement that people will understand. They're going to be constant from one device to another. Now, why do we need to really think about dose? Well, one of the big reasons is because we are being bombarded by a whole series of electromagnetic fields. Yes, there's a bunch of them that are produced by the Earth, the Schumann resonances that we've always been exposed to. We've evolved alongside them. But with the development of digital technology, particularly communication technologies, we're seeing an exponential exposure. You can live in an apartment block and be bombarded from 20, 30 different Wi-Fi fields. People have their devices close to them a lot of the time. And of course, a digital wave is actually quite different from a natural wave. A natural wave has this sine wave quality, the smooth, rounded troughs and crests. A digital wave is a stepped wave. And nature has not. We have not evolved alongside these digital frequencies. So, and obviously, just as when we see a digital recording being delivered to us in analog sound, when we listen to a music system, it goes through a converter. That's a device that needs to convert a digital signal to an analog signal. We call it a digital to analog converter. But if these kinds of components are going to be locked away inside a device, we kind of need to know something about it. And we need to have standard units of measurement so that we know we're being overexposed or not. So Typically, when you look at, you remember that an electromagnetic field is basically a hybrid between an electrical field and a magnetic field working at perpendicular 90 degrees to one another. So magnetic fields are generally measured in milli-gauss, or that's often the unit used in the US, or nanotesla, where 1 milligauss is equivalent to 100 nanotesla. Electrical fields are typically measured in volts per meter, and radio frequencies, which are the elements that really can cause havoc with biological systems, typically measured in microwatts per square meter. So ICNIRP, the International Commission on Non-Ionizing Radiation, has published a whole range of exposure limit values, ELVs, or action levels, for static and time variable fields. These are not adequate. They simply are not designed for the non-thermal effects. You'll know that if you put a cell phone to your head, you'll find that it's warming. And so what ICNIRP have done is really focus on those thermal effects, whereas actually we know that these radio frequency fields, when we're exposed to large amounts of them, it's the non-thermal effects that can play havoc with biological functions. So we link to the work of the Bioinitiative report that's pulled together many of the top scientists around the world. I actually hosted one of the original meetings in the Royal Society back in, I think it was 2011, when we pulled many of these scientists together. So it's still being updated all the time. It's a great place to go to look at the sum total of data that shows the harm that can be caused. So let's look at this idea of understanding the units of measurement so we know what kind of quanta we're dealing with. And we also, in our article, give a link to a fantastic document by a chap by the name of Graham Arthur, who has written a great piece called Tips for Reducing EMF Exposure. Within that is a lot of advice that can help you in your home, in your workplace, to reduce overall EMF exposure. Now, who's your best friend? Well, I did question in the article whether it was a dog, but our suggestion in this modern world, if you really care about health, is that we should have access to an EMF meter of some sort. So I use the Tri-Field device. It's a great device because it allows you to measure both in standard and in weighted modes, magnetic and electrical fields. The weighted mode is particularly useful because it gives you a more sensitive signal for the frequencies that we know are more likely to be harmful. So depending on whether you're looking at a washing machine, a dishwasher, you're looking at, with electrical fields, you'd be looking at wires in the wall. There's one very close to your bed. You might want to move your bed. And of course, then if you're looking at all the wireless communication devices, you want to be looking at radio frequencies, the RF value here. So you can see in this office, because we now have a number of devices playing at the moment because we're recording, we're actually sitting at what we consider to be the threshold that you should stay below. You can see it's sitting at about 0.1315. The threshold that Tri-Field set that we very much agree with is 0.2. So, and we've got the audio, you can hear it making a horrendous noise in the background. That's pretty useful because as you get to a high source, it will start making a hell of a racket and you'll know about it. So a great device, should be your best friend. Just very briefly, the levels that Tri-Field suggest, for which there are no data suggesting adverse effects, for the magnetic field, should be below 3 milligauss or maybe 5 milligauss in the weighted mode. For electrical fields, round about 50 volts per meter, standard or weighted, and then the radio frequencies, as I've mentioned, 0.2 milliwatts per square meter. Those are levels that we should really stay below. So when we wanted to demystify what's going on in this very popular growing space called frequency medicine, what we decided to do is to create a taxonomy. I'm a biologist and ecologist by original training. When we look at complex systems, it's quite useful. The human mind, us as scientists, we like to divide things up. So what we did is create a taxonomy. And one of the reasons for doing that is because the sector as a whole isn't very clear necessarily in terms of its public-facing communication, what category different devices fit into. So taxonomy was the starting point. So we've divided it into electromagnetic devices, magnetic devices that use, including static fields as well as variable fields, electrical devices, bioelectrical devices, which is a lot of the devices that are used in physiotherapy, for example. Then you've got the Rife machines that use plasma, others that use gas. And of course, we've got those that rely not on electromagnetic or electrical fields, but use vibration, resonance, and sound. You remember, sound is not an electromagnetic frequency, but of course it has a frequency. That's what we're hearing all the time. And we know that sound is one of the reasons that sound therapy and sound healing, these resonances that come from sound, are incredibly important for health. And then we've also got an other group. Everyone has to have a miscellaneous group. And in there, we've thrown the mixed bag of many of them obviously aren't plugged into an electrical source, from homeopathy to torsion fields, tensor field generators. We've got some in the office, scalar waves, PIMAT, etc. We've also linked to some really important reference documents that you might find useful. David Moosom with Tiffany Barsotti, who I've had the great pleasure of meeting, have written a fantastic paper called The Overview of Biofield Devices. And it's published in a journal called Global Advances in Health and Medicine. That's a great document to dip into. And then you've got the work, probably more specifically in the physiotherapy type bioelectrical devices, by Professor Tim Watson, who's worked on it for years now, retired, who's got a wonderful website called Electrotherapy on the Web. Really useful resources to dive into. So the question is, when you're going to have a look and understand any kind of complex system, particularly one that's using invisible delivery of invisible energy, it's really important to have a method of characterizing not only the device, but the energy fields that are being measured or being emitted. So to do that, we've gone to the work of a scientist who's worked for many years, originally from the University of Bulgaria. And Professor Marko Markov published a huge amount. He's got a fantastic book that we've got as well, published around about 200 peer-reviewed papers, huge numbers of conference proceedings. And Markov has come up with exactly the same view that we consider of concern, that there just isn't enough data being delivered by many manufacturers to really understand what it is that this device is doing. Great to be belief-driven, and it's great to look at results based on clinical evidence or effectiveness, but you know, you wouldn't buy a food if it didn't have an ingredients label. You wouldn't use a medication if it didn't have an ingredients label. So why should frequency device manufacturers sell devices when they're not telling you what components are in there, or what the characteristics of the electromagnetic fields that they're issuing are, or what the characteristics of those fields that they're measuring from the body? Bearing in mind that the body is delivering ultra weak field. So you need really, really sensitive antennae or detectors to be able to measure those fields. So what we did was basically go to Markov and say, right, what criteria do you think, as a long-standing researcher in this field, everyone should be giving about their devices? So Markov listed a number of criteria. We approached about 20-odd companies. We took as much data as we could from the public domain, from their websites. We also then wrote to the companies and said, look, guys, can you provide us with any additional data on these Markov criteria, what we call the Markov criteria? So these are things like the type of field, the frequency range, the pulse shape, the intensity, the gradient, the vector, what component was electrical or magnetic, what was the, you know, the depth of penetration, and of course the key when it comes to dosimetry, what is the time of exposure, the duration of a typical frequency session with the device. So when we looked at all the devices, we saw a number of companies came out really well. Vitatech, Rayonex, BioWell, Resident Light Technologies, these were companies that had lots of data that filled many of these parameters. But there were also some companies that really we couldn't find a lot of data about at all. So the iTeraCare wand is a device that's made in China in a manufacturing site that we can't find. It's sold through a network marketing company pretty aggressively. And one of the reasons it came onto our radar is it's being sold in particular to people who've been COVID-19 vaccine injured. And we know of at least four people who've been put in hospital since they were using it. Whether the device was directly the a cause of the hospitalization still remains to be known. We just did not find that this is meant to be issuing terahertz, and the terahertz range is the least studied range in the electromagnetic field for these kinds of devices. Another company that's really become very popular in the US of late is Energy Enhancement System, or EES, that is using scalar waves being emitted via screens. Tony Robbins and others are screaming about it, but again, not a lot of data about exactly what it's doing or how it's doing it, whether there's the prospect of any harm. We do think it's really important that companies lift their game in terms of transparency. The consequences of not giving a lot of data are pretty obvious. Regulators basically are not just regulators, they are protectors, and the main protectors, the main industry that they're protecting are the pharmaceutical companies that are their key paymasters. So if this sector does not lift its game and be more transparent about not only what the technology and specifications of the technology are, but also around the claims and the particularly around the claims of evidence, trouble will ensue and the sector will be hit pretty hard. And there's a big history, particularly in the United States, which has not been friendly towards these technologies, of the FDA getting very, very heavy. We've seen it in Australia as well with the TGA that have banned bioresonance. So really important that we ensure that there are adequate data there, that because it's an emerging field, the regulators find everything to do with EM fields to be very alien anyway, so we have to educate at the same time. There are a number of things that we think manufacturers could be a lot clearer about. First of all, is it really measuring the human biofield? And if it's doing that, has it got enough sensitivity built into it so it can separate the ultra weak magnetic, electromagnetic fields from the human body from all the background sources? Is it able to do that? Does it emit or deliver frequencies? And if it does, how does it do that? Through what kind of connection? Is it through the air? Is it through a cable? Does it use algorithms? So when it receives a measurement from the body, does it then convert those into a digital signal or an analog signal, deliver them back? What's happening in terms of that process? Obviously, another really important thing is, what kind of protocols come with it, what kind of instructions that ensure that there are limits on the duration of exposure, what parts of the body are being exposed, etc. So there is a need for more clarity on this. When it comes to how the devices work, obviously we have to recognize that the weakness of the fields, it doesn't mean they're not important, they're incredibly important, but the weakness of the electromagnetic fields spanning all the way across the wavelengths, including into the 200 to 800 nanometer visible light spectrum that, for example, biophotons exist in, that needs to be covered off really, really careful. It's a bit like if we have a camera, are we using a macro lens to look at a very small part of the body, particular tissues, cells? We're looking at DNA, we're looking at whole cells, whole organs. Or are we looking at the whole body? And if we're looking at the whole body, does that measurement make sense? So the scale and the resolution in that scale is something that's really important for companies to be really clear about. I talked about the communication between the body and the device. You know, are the signals really clean? Are they free from background noise? And, you know, if they're cables, just a simple specification, are they double insulated, triple insulated, so that you are really reading that signal without the additional noise in there? Otherwise, you know, if you're in an electrosmog-rich area, you could have a very dirty signal. When it comes to what kind of evidence we use on how they work, in the article, I've highlighted 10 areas, and there are probably more, but these are the really important areas about where people get information about the effectiveness and even the safety of devices. So from personal experience, the word of mouth, whether it's testimonials, are there key opinion leaders involved who are endorsing the technology? Is it adverts that are making claims? Are the claims substantiated or not? What about third-party reviews? Is there mechanistic evidence from mechanistic studies of a plausible biological effect? If there are trials, are these trials done by the manufacturer? Are they unpublished, so sitting in reports, or are they published in peer-reviewed journals? If they are, what kind of journals? Are they outcome-based studies that are looking at the effects of the technology in conjunction with any other modalities? Again, are they published or unpublished? Or do we even have aggregated clinical evidence where we see the results from dozens, hundreds of practitioners rather than one or two? So these are all things that, you know, in communicating effectiveness data, companies can be much, much clearer about. And the trouble is, we don't get this right. We get organizations like the Advertising Standards Authority, which is not a regulator. It's not a government regulator, I should say. It is a media industry self-regulator in the UK that behaves like it is the regulator. And many people think it is a government regulator. And they will impose sanctions on companies or individuals or practitioners who breach their code of conduct or their code of practice. So they have a non-broadcasting code. One of the things they really push is substantiation of evidence. And they have released a number, in fact, two different charges against bioresonance companies because they don't believe the data is supported. And they are on the look for frequency medicine companies that make what they consider to be unsubstantiated claims, and they will go after them. And of course, they can then report any companies that they find to the medicines and medical devices regulator in the UK, which is the MHRA, the equivalent of the FDA in the US. So, concluding remarks. Well, Einstein famously said, as I said at the intro of my part one article, that future medicine will be the medicine of frequencies. Now, Have I lost enthusiasm for that with some of the critical comments I made? Absolutely not. I absolutely believe wholeheartedly this is a really, really important new frontier. But it is really important that companies understand the complexities of navigating the regulatory swamp where they've got an unfavorable attitude from the regulators who want to see them stamped out. And one of the ways around that is being really transparent and clear about what you're doing, what you've got, what you're claiming. So we've ended the piece with an appeal. What we're doing is asking, we've already had two or three companies contact us to say, can we work together to try and create a framework for a responsible and sustainable development of this frequency medicine sector. So thanks so much for listening. You'll find links below to both the part one, looking at the essentiality of electromagnetic fields to life, part two on the devices. We're going to do lots more work in this field moving forward. And we haven't touched on some really important ideas. Mark Conrad in his comments has already said, what about mind? What about consciousness? Of course, looking at the whole sort of non-local effects, quantum biology, hugely important area, probably very fundamental to where all of the science around what we call frequencies or electromagnetic fields or the biofield is going. So massively exciting new frontier of medicine. It is part and parcel what natural health is always about, but we need to be cautious as we move forward. Thank you so much for listening.